tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 5th of February 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. And I have to begin today by apologising because on last week's Thursday podcast with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, who we do have here with us today, on that podcast I made a bit of a fool of myself and I forgot to tick the box that says use the USB mic. So the sound quality of my voice last week was dreadful because it was using the old laptop mic and the laptop's about 10 years old. So I do apologise for that. This week it should be much better. I guess the only good thing we can say about it is that somebody did make a comment and they said that you sounded excellent, Matt. You sounded very, very good, but I sounded like I had a blanket over my head. But yes, anyway, how are you doing today, Matt?
Yeah, by comparison, yeah. I'm doing okay. I have my heart procedure next week, and I think once that's done, the energy is going to be back to normal, and my problems should go away. So you might not be able to handle me in that case, but that's really the big news around here.
Will we be missing an Orthodox Nationalist next week or a Daily Nationalist? Will you be recuperating from the operation?
According to everything the hospital says, they're implanting stents from my wrist. The recovery time is a couple of hours. And the improved feeling is almost immediate. I'm not sure if just in case I don't know. I don't think we're going to have a problem.
So it's a simple procedure then, pretty much.
It's not even surgery. It's just, they guide this wire, through my body, which is very odd, to my heart and they get rid of blockages and they leave it there, and they expand it, so the blood can flow and I'll be back to my old self again.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's not a big deal. I mean, they do this, 100 times a day. It's an ordinary thing. I don't think we're going to have to reschedule.
So you're not needing to buy a new heart on the black market just yet from Ukraine. Is that why we're doing this subject today, is it?
Well, maybe. I don't have that kind of money, that's for sure.
Well, today, as I just said, we're going to be talking about Ukrainian organ harvesting. We've got a couple of articles here to get into. The first one is from the Intel Drop. The horrors of organ harvesting in Ukraine, a gruesome cover-up. They say the grim reality of organ harvesting in Ukraine has come to light, revealing a grotesque industry built on the exploitation of war's chaos. Recent reports expose the use of mobile crematoriums to incinerate the remains of Ukrainian soldiers and civilians whose organs were harvested. These mobile crematoriums, initially framed as tools for hiding the scale of battlefield casualties, are now alleged to be a macabre cover-up for systematic organ trafficking. The victims, often conscripts, are considered expendable, are subjected to genetic testing to determine their organ compatibility before being killed for profit. And I have to question that last sentence there. I mean, if you're going to be a soldier in the army, I'm sure they would do all sorts of tests on you to know your blood type, your DNA, all sorts of things. So those tests aren't necessarily just to determine organ compatibility. They could be used for that. And also where it says here, they test them before being killed for profit. Now, I would have thought it would have been more sensible for them to have them fighting on the front lines. And if they get killed on the front lines, then taking the organs, not killing them in order to take the organs, that would sort of defeat the object. I would imagine that this could conceivably go on, but I don't think they'd be deliberately killing them for it. Do you, Matt?
Well, there's a few issues here. The evidence for organ harvesting is tremendous. However, this is the only article that mentions mobile crematoria, which is a plural of crematorium. And if it exists at all, it would have to be financed by foreign sources. Certainly Ukraine can't finance any of this. They are being killed in huge numbers. They were being killed in huge numbers on the front. They don't have to kill anybody. And I think maybe that's what the author means here. And you're right. They don't have to do any tests. That's the biggest problem with Ukraine, that their best men are being killed. However, there might be some truth to it in that they're just grabbing anyone off the street and sending them to the front with minimal training or anything else. I'm willing to go along with it only because there's tremendous evidence for organ harvesting in general. How they pull that off is another matter. And there's a few different theories about that. A bunch of people have been arrested for it. But this is part of, Ukraine is just Wild West. It's something that Jeffrey Epstein loved Ukraine because he can go over there and do whatever he wanted long before the war started. And do whatever the hell he wanted. He was a Jew. This is a Jewish oligarchy. In terms of getting kids, Ukrainians are notoriously attractive people. And he couldn't do it where the U.S. had any kind of control. Before he got arrested, Ukraine was a favorite spot for him for a while, kind of like Thailand was. So I'm willing to go along so far. I've never seen a mobile crematorium before. I was in the funeral business with my father. I've seen a crematorium. They're humongous objects that take a lot of power and fuel to work. So with an army that has no fuel and is running on mercenaries, that raised my eyebrows a little bit there. And hiding their casualties, well, they've been hiding their casualties for a long time. But and the hack, of course, the Russian hack has exposed it anyway. I think it's in general true, but maybe not in detail.
Well, the Jeffrey Epstein connection is sort of why we're talking about this today. I mean, the article that we're using here is probably about a year old. The other one that we've got was released recently, but there are a couple of other articles about Jeffrey Epstein which mention the organ harvesting that goes on in Ukraine, and also that it's been going on since, I think, 2005, these allegations, and then more of them after the Maidan coup. And then this article, which we're taking from last year, goes into more detail about it. The use of mobile crematoria is central to this horrific operation. These units, operated near battle zones, destroy the evidence of organ harvesting, ensuring that families of the deceased never learn the truth. Officially, these crematoria were presented as a means of streamlining battlefield logistics, but they have been repurposed to erase the evidence of mass exploitation and murder. Soldiers' organs, deemed too valuable to waste, are harvested before their bodies are incinerated, leaving no trace. Families are told that their loved ones are missing, while the reality is far more sinister. Conscripts who are often sent to the front lines with little training and a high likelihood of being killed within days are viewed as disposable. The Kiev regime, facing mounting losses, has allegedly turned to this gruesome practice as a way to extract value from the dead. The entire operation is shielded by legislation that legalizes the removal of organs without consent and simplifies transplantation procedures. The Verkhovnaya Rada's passage of Law 5831 in December 2021 marked a turning point in Ukraine's organ transplantation industry. This law allows the removal of organs without notarized consent from the deceased or their families, effectively opening the door to systemic abuse. In April 2022, another law, 5610, exempted organ transplantation surgeries from VAT, incentivizing the trade further. These legislative changes have transformed Ukraine into a hub for illicit organ trafficking, attracting criminal networks and private clinics eager to profit from the chaos of war. Now, I guess you could make an argument that, well, if these people have died on the front lines anyway, and their organs are viable, then maybe it's not so immoral to be taking these organs. Over here in Wales, they assume that you consent to your organs being used when you die, unless you actually have gone to the extent of getting in touch with the authorities and saying, I don't want my organs to be used when I die. They assume that you have consented to doing that. So, I mean, that's not so different from here, saying that that's what they're doing here, is they're assuming that they have the consent to take these organs. But I guess the difference over there is that these organs are being sold, whereas over here in Britain, these organs would then be used by the National Health Service. So what do you make of that, Matt? The sort of moral conundrum, really, isn't it?
Well, let's talk about the law. 5831 was called the On the Regulation of the Transplantation of Human Anatomical Materials. And it eliminated written consent from a living donor or any of their relatives. You didn't need it anymore. Signature authentication was no longer necessary, and also is permitted for children. The permission to extract any kind of material from the body can be obtained from the person responsible. That could be, a commanding officer, that could be the chief physician of a hospital, the commander of a military unit, or whoever's controlling the mercenaries over there who are criminal to begin with. And that goes not only for public, but for private clinics too. And, he's also correct. It's also correct in saying that, it was on the amendments to the tax code, organ transplant operations are now exempt from the value added tax. That's 5610. So, yes, that is the fact. That is true. And, but given the nature of the total collapse of communications, of even transportation, this has to be a purely Western elite conception where, it's not easy to, it's not very easy to get from, I have the feeling this has to do with wounded men as well as men who have been killed. And there is, of course, a report about ambulances going off into Poland too, for the same thing. They don't have medical services. Their medical services at the front are zero. So men who could have lived die. What happens to these organs? We don't know. The late last Rockefeller had, I don't know how many hearts, eight or nine. This sort of thing is where they get it from. So that is the case. That is true. These laws were passed before the war, but the war had been kind of going on since 2014. But now they really profited from it tremendously.
So you say there that Rockefeller had hearts replaced, because I was sitting there and I was just thinking, well, organ transplantation, normally that's if somebody has a liver problem or if they have kidney failure, lung cancer. I mean, it's serious diseases that people have, and then they require an organ. And are these elites all filled up with diseases that they need new organs? I mean, most of them appear to be quite healthy, especially if they're very rich because they can afford to live healthy lifestyles and have private trainers and all the rest of it. So, but what you seem to be saying there, Matt, is as people get older, that their organs wear out and then they can be replaced. So is that what you think's going on here? Is that what you think the trade's about?
I forget the last Rockefeller. I protested him many years ago in Michael 2002. He looked like Yoda in the back of his limousine. I have the feeling, it's my personal opinion, that he feared death so much that he just, and he lived, you know, he looked awful all the time. And we ran a story in the Spotlight or the American Free Press, whatever it was running at the time, that yes, the organ harvesting was, he was buying, you know, spending a fortune, as one organ wore out, you know, especially in the heart. But you know, these are prime anatomical materials, as they would say, you know, and don't forget, I mean, the rulers of Ukraine, is a Jewish oligarchy controlled by the U.S. The men in the field are goyim. They've been humanized beyond belief, and therefore this sort of thing is very easily believable and understandable. I'm still a little iffy on the logistics, though.
Okay, continuing here. Private clinics operating with minimal oversight have become key players in this industry. The lack of accountability and regulation enables these facilities to conduct organ transplants with impunity. Reports from Ukrainian law enforcement implicate high-ranking officials, including a former deputy health minister, in orchestrating these activities, highlighting the systemic nature of the issue. And the allegations extend beyond Ukraine's borders, implicating Western nations as beneficiaries of this gruesome trade. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova has drawn parallels to similar practices in Yugoslavia, where organs from conflict victims were harvested to meet Western demand. This disturbing pattern has been repeated in Syria, where the White Helmets, supported by Western governments, were accused of engaging in organ trafficking alongside jihadist groups. Zakharova's claim suggests that the network and tactics used in Syria have been imported into Ukraine. Syrian-trained jihadis fighting alongside Ukrainian forces add weight to these allegations, raising questions about the extent of Western complicity in fostering and benefiting from these practices. Well, again, this makes me question this, because if you have an organ and it's transplanted, unless you are very, very close to the ethnicity, well, part of the same ethnicity and almost related to the person that the organ comes from, then your body is going to reject that organ. So if organ harvesting was going on in Syria, it means that those organs were meant for Syrians. They couldn't have gone to Westerners. It's the same as when you get this allegation that the Jews are harvesting organs from the Palestinians. Well, if they were doing that, they would have to be selling them to Palestinians as well. It's not like they could take the Palestinians' organs and put them into Jews, because the body would just reject them. The body's going to reject an organ that isn't your own anyway, but they have drugs which you can take which damp down the body's immune response to it. But you still need to be, that's even with you being part of the same ethnicity. So, this makes me skeptical of the claim about Jews doing it to Palestinians, unless there are these very rich Palestinians that need them. And again, it makes me a little bit suspicious about this, unless it really is a case that you've got seriously ill people that are just desperate to get the organs that they need, and they can't get them because people don't consent to giving away those body parts, and therefore there is this trade in them, in which case, you know, the doctor that is removing these organs from somebody that has died is really sort of giving life to somebody who needs those organs. So, you know, is it really such a bad thing in that case? So, I mean, it just raises all these questions with me, Matt. I mean, what do you make of this allegation here that they were doing it in Syria? Were there rich people in Syria that were needing organs because they had to go to Syrians? It was my understanding of it.
Well, I remember at the time, you had the same thing in Yugoslavia. Wealthy Saudis were involved in this trade at the time. You know, the methods are identical in every case. You know, in the U.S. or in Britain, you know, someone needs an organ. They have to go through, you know, the committee has to meet, you know, is this person healthy? You know, how old is this person? Can he actually get the good out of it? None of that applies here. This is for profit. God knows where it goes. It has nothing to do with, you know, there's no humanitarian element here. This is a business. The KLA was doing this with Serbian troops. I read the UN report about that way back. I remember. It just seems very hard to believe at first, but you realize, you know, when you dehumanize someone to this extent, it's really no shock that they would go along with this. You dehumanize somebody, organ harvesting is really no big deal. But these aren't, you know, these aren't going for, you don't have a committee meeting at a big hospital. These are being sold to the wealthy for various, you know, for their people. So they live forever, you know, like Rockefeller. I still can't think of his name. The one who died just a few years ago, the head of the family.
Rothschild?
Of course.
Is that Rothschild?
No, Rockefeller.
I was going to say, Rothschild died, didn't he, last year? One of them.
Yeah. Well, that's very possible. Yeah. So he privately, you know, he there's a little naivete here, operating with minimal oversight. I assume he means in Ukraine. Well, there is no oversight of anything in Ukraine. There is no accountability or regulation. There is no law there, especially today, especially and even last year. It is the Wild West, and that's why in 2018. We have emails from Epstein talking about Ukraine. This is my kind of place, that I could do whatever I want there. You know, there, especially as the war winds down, this is the ultimate place for a criminal who's into this kind of thing to go. Same thing for war-torn Syria. Same thing for war-torn Yugoslavia. And that's important to remember. The ethnic part, of course, is true. In the Syrian case, it was Saudis. I can't remember who, but the Saudis were financing some of that, along with the white helmets.
Well, I guess the Saudis might be quite close genetically to the Syrians. So, I mean, it might be plausible that they could use their organs. But they would have to take an awful lot of drugs to suppress the immune system's response to it, which would be trying to reject that organ for the rest of the person's life. Another chilling aspect of these allegations is the reported involvement of biolabs and online platforms. Zakharova has accused the Pentagon of deploying biolabs in Ukraine under the guise of health initiatives. These labs, she claims, serve as testing grounds for unethical experiments, including genetic testing to identify organ compatibility. Criminal networks have even advertised organs online, allowing buyers to place specific orders, turning human lives into commodities. Zakharova has described Ukraine's legislative changes as legalized lawlessness, enabling atrocities on an industrial scale. A combination of deregulated transplantation procedures, private clinic involvement, and tax incentives has created a perfect storm for exploitation. In her words, the Kiev regime is ready to pay anything for the military assistance it gets. It has now even come to the human organs of its citizens. So you think there could be a bit of a quid pro quo there. They get funds from the American government, and in exchange, organs come back that can be used on the rich and powerful. Do you think that's how it goes, Matt?
Well, I'm going to be shameless here for a minute. The title of my most recent book is Borhi Splachini Krovyu, and it means that debts are paid in blood. I didn't realize how literal it was until I came across this. Everything they're saying here is very believable, because there is no law over there. Things that you couldn't do in the U.S., or if you could, you had to be, you know, very, very careful. You can get away with in Ukraine or war-torn Syria. And Zagarova has cited in her own work many, you know, what we would consider more or less authoritative reports on all of this. And the case against various peoples is growing and growing and growing. You know, I can't believe it. I think maybe it used to be, I used to mock the Kosovo economy because it's based entirely on girls and drugs, which it still is, by the way, which is why I'm not allowed there. We're at a point now here, possibly, where the Ukrainian economy is based on organs and girls and drugs, because they don't produce anything else that the West wants. But it is not, it's not a matter of humanitarianism. It's a matter of buying and selling for and increasing the profit. I assume that these advertisements are on the dark web. But, you know, I can't say I've been through a huge amount of the Epstein files. It's just so massive. But a few people I've read concerning this particular issue, there is a lot of support for this in these emails that people have written back and forth before Epstein got arrested. But this has been going on for some time. And yeah, it makes sense, given the dehumanization of the Goyim. The Jews always win, you know, no matter who dies. So so quite literally, the Kiev regime is paying its debt in blood.
Well, this is an allegation here about the biolabs. I mean, that's been verified. I mean, it's, people have testified under oath to Congress that America had biolabs there. And of course, they say, well, we had these biolabs there because we were testing out these diseases because we want to find cures for these diseases and vaccines for them and things that will make us immune for them and antidotes to them. But of course, that still means that they're growing biological weapons in a laboratory in Ukraine. And it's the same here. I would say that this, where it says here about testing to see whether they're compatible, well, that would just be like a side effect of the other research that they're doing on human subjects. They're going to find out all the details they can about them. And of course, those details could be used to see whether they were compatible for a recipient, for their organs. But at the same time, that data can also be used to learn more about the functioning of the human body or learning more about individual organs. So it's not necessarily that it would just be used for that. It's not sinister in its own way that they would be genetically testing people. You know, I think that's... But again, that would be their cover story, wouldn't it? The same as with the biolabs when they said, well, we're just trying to find antidotes for diseases. Well, the allegations of organ trafficking in Ukraine have profound implications for the international community. If true, they reveal a level of exploitation that transcends national borders, implicating governments, private entities, and criminal networks in a web of corruption and greed. The involvement of Western nations as beneficiaries of this trade raises serious ethical and legal questions that demand immediate attention. International organizations and human rights watchdogs must prioritize this issue. The victims of these crimes. Yeah. Yeah. That does make you laugh, doesn't it? Well, yeah, it does, as if they're going to do anything. Well, later on, I think it tells you that they're involved in it as well. International organizations and human rights watchdogs must prioritize this issue. The victims of these crimes deserve justice, and the perpetrators must be held accountable. Failure to act would not only betray the victims, but also set a dangerous precedent, allowing such practices to continue unchecked in future conflicts. The use of mobile crematoriums to cover up organ harvesting in Ukraine represents one of the most chilling atrocities of the 21st century. Zakharova's claims, supported by reports and investigations, paint a picture of systemic exploitation, fueled by greed and facilitated by legislative and logistical frameworks. The international community must rise to the challenge, exposing and eradicating these practices before they become further entrenched. Anything less would be a failure of humanity and justice. Well, he's alleging here that it's the international community that is responsible for this. So how can he then here at the end request that the international community rise to the challenge and investigate this?
You know, the site is, he's a little naive. People who come across this for the first time, they get all excited, they want to write about it. It's a decent site. But they tend to broadcast things that we've known for years as revelations they just discovered. And I don't think they're plagiarizing. I think they're just, you know, a little bit naive. Yeah, of course he's saying, of course there's international community is a myth to begin with. International law doesn't mean anything. And Zakharova would not get behind a podium unless she had reports from all over the place, including the United Nations. This has been going on for some time. He just seems to be very dumb and naive here. But the only part of this I really question is the crematoria. That's such a logistic, that would be a nightmare to get them around. And the fuel it would take. Maybe it's a mistranslation. And you know what? Even if they didn't burn the body, it would be very easy just to get, you know, dump them in a mass grave anyway. They're not going to be taken into account for anything they do. That's a great part about being allied with the U.S. You know, the Albanians learn that. You know, you could do whatever you want. But this, you know, I believe it, of course, because it's an ongoing thing. I heard about it for the first time in the Yugoslav War. The KLA, a bunch of people got arrested for it there. I don't know whatever happened to them. The KLA was making money on Serbian, actually POWs, organs. I'm not 100% sure where those cases were disposed or how it was disposed, but this has been around for a very long time. And these tend to thrive in places where law doesn't exist. So in places where the state is very weak or war has destroyed any semblance of law and order. But of course he's right. But the international community is, this is what they do. This is the regime he's talking about. The international community is the regime. In their minds, of course, is this mythical entity. But in reality, it's the ruling classes. And they're the ones who are benefiting from this. They're the ones who are permitting this. However, I have to admit, slowly but surely, this is getting into mainstream news articles. Now, sometimes they debunk them. Sometimes they don't. So the regime itself is having a debate about this. How much of this should we reveal? Are Americans really going to care that much? Doesn't really affect them. But Zakharova, if you read some of her stuff, you know, she has reports from all over the place. So, yeah, there's truth to it. Whether or not, you know, Intel Drop is the greatest source, he's just a little naive, that's all. But he has the right idea.
You know, I think there were allegations of mobile crematorium vans in World War II as well. I'm sure they make up part of the Holocaust narrative. Mobile crematoria. Yeah, sure, pretty certain of that. Well, the next article that we have does well, can't sorry. We mustn't deny the Holocaust. Mobile crematoria, no, Holocausters are all believable things. They could have all happened. They were real in somebody's mind anyway. Well, the next article that we've got is global research, and this does link Epstein to this. And I didn't use the rest of the article because I just didn't think there was enough evidence for this. And he was talking about making like these claims. And then, for instance, one part that he showed, he said that Epstein had millions of children that he was trafficking in this ring. And his evidence for that was a book that was being marketed to millions of children, basically, this book that he was involved in. And I couldn't see how they could leap from that to this was a huge child trafficking network, and they're actually referring to all these children that would be then sent into Europe, where they would then suffer abuse by these pedophile elites. I mean, it sort of comes under the same thing as this talking about adrenochrome, that the elites drain the blood from people and then drink the blood because it will all be laced with the adrenaline that's produced just before they die. Well, if they want to take adrenaline, they can just create adrenaline. They can just synthesize it. I mean, if you're talking about chemistry, you can pretty much synthesize anything. You don't need to get it from a human body. So unless it was part of a satanic ritual and the whole thing was about killing a child, and though that might go on, and there are reports of it in history, particularly from one particular group, there are reports of it, but not on a mass scale, not like millions of children, I don't think. So I think some of these claims are a bit way out, and I think they're put in there to try and distract from the real message that you get from the Epstein stuff, which is all the references to the Goyim, ripping people off, the dodgy deals that were going on between people like Peter Mandelson selling insider information, and the fact that all these people in it that he was getting this insider information from, that they're all Jewish. That's the important thing to take from these Epstein files, I think. Not that there are millions of children that are being trafficked by Epstein. I don't think there was. Perhaps there were some children being trafficked by him. I've seen one email which says that he had a Brazilian 9-year-old. So quite clearly he was a pedophile. It wasn't that he was just going with girls of the age of 16 or 17. He was literally going after little children. So that there is proof of that, but not that there was a million children that he was selling. I think that's an exaggeration. But do you want to make any comments on that, Matt, before I give this quote here on these Epstein files?
Yeah, I the millions is just an emotional reaction. I don't believe that at all. I think logistically that's impossible. But, you know, the economic aspect, you know, these are goyim. You know, therefore, they could treat them and abuse them in any way they want, including organ harvesting. So it all seems to fit together to me. Now, the article that we're dealing with here from Global Research actually has a lot of emails concerning some of this stuff, concerning Epstein and some others that, you know, are definitely worth looking at. It's certainly believable. You know, they're goyim, therefore we could treat them any way we want. And you're absolutely right. You know, the economic stuff goes right along with the abuse of children, and that goes right along with the abuse of their bodies.
Well, let's get into this quote here. I mean, it basically backs up the earlier quotes that we've used. In 2022, in the early months of the special military operation, a video surfaced of a Russian soldier, Shukrat Adilov, interviewed by a Russian TV channel. Adilov was barely able to put into words the monstrous treatment of toddlers and preschool kids he saw. Children aged 2 to 7 from areas around Izium were brutally massacred and then had their organs removed for trafficking. There was also a testimony by Vera Vyaman, an OSCE observer, who gave a similar account. US Army Colonel Douglas McGregor effectively confirmed both Adilov's and Vyaman's findings. Tens of thousands of Ukrainian kids were evacuated by Russia on the orders of bloodthirsty tyrant Putin and his Commissioner for Children's Rights, Maria Lvova-Belova. The Kremlin moved the children to safety in Russia, where they were eventually reunited with their families, including fathers who were enemy combatants and fought the Russian military. And yet the mainstream propaganda machine still tries to present this as a mass kidnapping. However, this wasn't enough, so the ICC, a NATO-controlled NGO impersonating an international court, indicted both Putin and Lvova-Belova for the above alleged crimes. Now, this is interesting because this is evidence that there was this organ harvesting that was going on, and that it was going on with children. And also there is the question of why would Putin remove all these children in the first place? I mean, you can say, well, during the war, you evacuate children from a war zone. And that's a plausible enough reason for him to have done that. But could it have been on top of that? There could have been this risk that these children could have had their organs taken for transplantation. And that was why, another reason why he had to remove those children out of the war zone. I mean, this was big news at the start of the war, wasn't it? That he had removed all of these children. So could that be that this is the reason, this is the reason for it? There's also a reference that Putin made to the vampires in the West, which people seem to think of as sort of money vampires, but perhaps he means literal vampires by taking these organs. What do you make of these allegations and these eyewitness reports here, Matt?
Well, these all fit together perfectly. You have someone from the OSCE verifying it. That's a big deal. I want to keep my eye on Vera. I don't know how long she's going to be around talking about this. We've both quoted Douglas McGregor many times on this show about what's going on. It may not. And remember, this town that they're talking about here is Russian, not Ukrainian. And again, you have years of propaganda that Russians are savages, that they're Asians, they're going to grow up to kill you. That to some extent, I mean, killing children straight out, that's you have to give me a lot of evidence for me to. But they may have just been killed anyway, even if only indirectly. But you know, these accusations have been made for a long time. This is precisely why Putin created the humanitarian corridor at the beginning of the war, so that children can leave. And that's exactly why he was indicted by the NATO ICC nonsense and considered a war criminal. And it shows you this is at the highest levels of the regime here. All of this, you know, and they're all saying the same, you know, OSCE, Adilov, McGregor, and so many others, Putin himself, are all saying the same thing. This is part of the reason why Putin has a commissioner for children's rights in the first place. And beyond that, the desertion from the Ukrainian military as well as the mercenaries is so tremendous. It's been an ongoing thing, but now it's just a flood. Doesn't matter if they're enemy combatants or not. He's also made sure that it's very easy to become a Russian citizen, get a Russian passport almost overnight, to make it easy to come over. And that's exactly what God knows how many hundreds of thousands have done. And it might even be that Ukraine will be reborn within the Russian borders, because so many Ukrainians are there. So and of course Russia has the money, you know, they're a creditor nation. You know, they've built all of these alternative trading schemes, and the sanctions haven't done much. Actually, been a positive thing. You know, they have the money, they have the tremendous gold reserves. You know, they can afford to finance all of this, and it's not something, you know, Putin was initially he was cryptic about it, but not so much anymore. But that's the reason. Yeah, he wanted children out of the war zone initially because the nationalist militias, while they still existed, took up residence in Russian speaking cities because they knew that Putin wouldn't hit them. That's a real human shields kind of idea. So he had to go very slowly to get rid of them. He couldn't just bomb the place. So when they finally did take the place, you know, that's why they're getting 99% voting to become a part of Russia. Remember, these are Russian speaking areas who have always wanted to be a part of Russia. Who the hell wants to be a part of the fifth world Ukrainian economy run by a handful of wealthy Jews who are both literally and figuratively vampires? And again, my book goes into great detail with all of this stuff. But it was just typical projection for the ICC to, again, which is a NATO, I mean, this is all regime, this is not a court by any means, to try to indict Putin on precisely what they were doing. So, and he got, I don't know how many kids out, but it was a huge number. And using the word vampire, yeah, Putin's not stupid. He's a politician. We all know that. But he's not stupid. He's certainly a lot smarter than anything in the West, anyone in the West. So using the word vampire, he's using it at least in a double way. It's double entendre, to say the least. It's quite, you know, it's financial as well as concerning blood. And I think the regime got extremely angry when he set up those corridors. And those corridors were precisely why he was indicted by the ICC, which made me laugh at the time. But these all fit together. These all make sense. And I think this article, the second half of the article we're dealing with here, and this is just the beginning of all the reports and everything else that show evidence for this. There's so many others. You have to use Yandex, though, to get there. You can't use Google. Yandex will send you, it will bring all of these up. Or Brave, I don't know what other search engines people use rather than Google. I use Yandex. And you'll see a flood of this stuff. TASS has written on this for years now. So, yes, it's true. Pedophilia seems to be almost a currency for the regime. And Putin is at war with it. The ball of vampires, literally and figuratively, is over.
Well, thank you very much for that, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.